Stu Does America.
Be sure to subscribe to the show, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Hit the bell for notifications. Wherever we, whenever we upload something new, you'll know about it. I'll get your holiday gear as well at StuDoesMerch.com. Code is Stu10. Get 10% off your order. We started today with a meeting that we always do in the morning of like, hey, what do you want to do for the monologue? And I had a few stories that I wanted to do. I kind of went back and forth, and I couldn't decide on which one I wanted to do. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do all of them today. We're just going to do all three of them. We're going to start, though, with the assassination of Brian Thompson. This was the United Healthcare CEO. Police race to find gunmen responsible for killing the United Healthcare CEO. Here's what we know from CNN. Police are searching for a gunman who shot and killed United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson in what they've described as a bold and deliberate daytime attack in the heart of New York City. Masked gunman was lying in wait outside the Hilton Midtown shortly before 7 a.m. Wednesday, according to New York Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch, as Thompson made his way to the hotel to attend his company's annual investor conference. When Thompson approached the building, a dark hooded figure with gray backpack appeared several feet behind the executive and shot him in the back. Surveillance video shows Thompson then stumbled forward before turning to face the assailant and falling to the ground. The gunman calmly walked toward the CEO and continued to shoot, appearing to clear a jam with a firearm momentarily before shooting again. Video shows Thompson was pronounced dead less than a half an hour later after the incident, and the search for the gunman who fled into Central Park continues Thursday. And you've probably seen the video. I'm not going to show it again to you. We do have pictures, however, of the assailant. This is him in a mask. He's very worried about COVID-19, guys. That's why he's wearing the mask. Although they did actually come up with a couple of pictures with him not having the mask on, I think from inside a Starbucks. You see one there and another there. He's smiling. Man, what a fun time it really is. It's interesting, and we'll get into this a little bit, whether this guy was a pro or not. You know, taking your mask off in front of cameras doesn't seem like a pro. He touched things inside the Starbucks and then threw them out. They were going to get the DNA and fingerprints off of that. So I don't know what this story was. Someone who's really pissed at the United Healthcare CEO for whatever reason. And to just give you a picture of how bizarre New York City is right now, you have this is a hotel, a Hilton, that was three blocks away from where we broadcasted every single day on the same street. 6th Avenue, three blocks away. We passed this. I walked by that hotel every single day when we were in New York City. On the corner of that street, I'm pretty sure it was that corner, or maybe it was one over, but I'm pretty sure it was that corner, is the original cart, the food cart, that turned into Halal Guys, which you may know is a giant chain now of like 1,000 restaurants across the country. That original cart was right there. I mean, it's in the middle of Midtown, and people walk by this place all the time. It's a massive hotel. And, you know, it's one of those situations that's really, really strange. And I don't know if there's anything like it in any other city, because, like, you had a guy just assassinated in, you know, broad daylight or dawn, right there on the streets of Manhattan. And one of the things that they said right away was, hey, like, this was a targeted killing. Or, like, we're not worried about this guy going necessarily around and started shooting people all over the place. You're safe to come to this area. Why? Because, like, 12 hours later, they were lighting the Rockefeller Christmas tree a few blocks away. Like, it is a weird, weird time to be in New York. And, you know, crime is rampant. Like, this stuff is happening all over the place. And yet at the same time, you have this kind of joyous Christmas season and one of the best places you could ever be during the holidays. Now, words were found on the shell casings where the CEO was shot dead. Senior law enforcement official is saying there are words like deny and depose, words that would indicate potentially that this person was just angry about some healthcare situation and decided to take it out on the CEO. And people are bringing up, you know, that United Healthcare was not a perfect company by any means. United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson was facing a DOJ probe for insider trading when he was killed and targeted during that NYC shooting. And, like, you know, so what? Like, that's really bad if he did something wrong on that. We'll never know, probably. But I don't even know if it's true. But what I will say is that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he was insider trading. It doesn't matter if he denied your claim. You don't go shoot somebody. And certainly you're not happy about it if it occurs and you happen to be an onlooker. Unless, of course, you're Taylor Lorenz. Taylor Lorenz has talked about a Blue Cross Blue Shield denial of a certain type of anesthesia. And Taylor Lorenz tweeted, "And people wonder why we want these executives dead. I should note, she didn't actually tweet that. She's no longer on Twitter or X. This was on Blue Sky. So this is the place that all the liberals left because they thought there wasn't enough content moderation on Twitter. So they went to Blue Sky so they could post their death threats, without any obstacles in the way. She also then posted the photo of the female CEO of the healthcare company because she's a psychopath. She then tweeted this. She said, "Wait, woke up to see that this spammed in my group chats. A happy star, some colorful balloons, and the words CEO down in the middle of it." I don't need to tell you that that is revolting in every single way. And Taylor Lorenz is a psychopath. I want to remind you, this is one of the craziest people in our society. This is somebody who, you know, would be the type of person that gets on a subway car and causes a disturbance. She's freaking nuts. I want to address something larger about this, but I want to pause for a moment and remind you that the New York Times and the Washington Post, for years and years and years, told you that this person, Taylor Lorenz, was not only sane, but was an authority on the culture of this country. You were supposed to understand the culture through her lens. This is an insane person. This is a person who's still wearing masks outdoors and importing UV lights to avoid COVID and saying normal breathing without a mask is raw dogging the air. That insane person was the person the New York Times and the Washington Post told you to depend on throughout COVID, by the way, through that period. She's not just insane, she's insane on that particular issue, but she was the cultural authority you were supposed to listen to. That is who these institutions are. You do not think they're insane enough, that I promise you. But honestly, like when I saw Taylor Lorenz and everyone was sharing those messages on Twitter, which is the only reason you'd ever know about them because no one's on Blue Sky. But I'm reading these and I'm like, well, of course, Taylor Lorenz said something dumb. She's insane. She's an insane person. Of course, she said the craziest thing in the world. And I was honestly shocked to see how common this sentiment was. Some from even people who claim to be on the right, but mostly people on the left, who were like celebrating this man being murdered in the streets. He's a 50-year-old husband. He has two children. They have to deal with no husband anymore. The wife has no husband anymore. The kids have no dad. And person after person after person cheering, laughing about it, thinking it's hilarious that this guy was gunned down in the streets. He deserved it. He's a CEO. He's a rich guy. He worked for a company that denied a claim of someone that I know, as if that justifies it. You can get a really negative opinion of the world if you go on social media and you start looking at what people do there. And so maybe I'm being victimized by that a little bit, but you see from the modern left complete passion to torch people who have too many commas in their bank accounts. It's okay, they're not humans. Because somebody was wealthy, and he was wealthy, he made a lot of money. He was a CEO of a major corporation. That's not a huge surprise. But it was okay to gleefully celebrate his murder. That's the compassionate side. That's the side that truly, really cares about family separations and trans rights. Bull crap. They don't care about any of that stuff. It's all about power for them, and it's revolting that this is how they want to claim the power. They're cheering on murders in the streets. She was not the only one. A lot of people on the left were doing this, and it's disgusting in a million different ways. I don't care how many claims he denied. I don't care how bad the company was. I don't care what they did, frankly. You don't gun down somebody who's walking to a shareholder meeting in the streets. I can't believe I have to say that. And by the way, just to note, because I hesitate to even bring up how dumb their arguments are about, you know, United Healthcare or any other healthcare company, because I think it almost like gives it voice, and it doesn't matter, frankly, how bad they were. But to be clear here, try going to another country, see how much you like it, wonder. As you're flying over there to get your treatment, why you're passing at the airport a bunch of people from France and Great Britain coming over here to get surgeries. Ask yourself why all of the medications that all those countries give out for free, quote unquote, which they don't do, why were they all developed here? Why? Why does every medical Nobel Prize come from the United States, or about 80% of them, despite the fact that we don't have anywhere near 80% of the global population? Why? And by the way, weren't we told Obamacare fixed the healthcare system? Where were all the people telling us, oh gosh, Obamacare will get passed and everything will be okay? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like people are still very, very upset about that. So you have that going on. Of course, Donald Trump is going to do a bunch of stuff. One move I don't like, of course, with RFK at HHS. One I do with the Bhattacharya at NIH. A bunch of different changes are coming. So the healthcare system's going to change for better or for worse. We'll see how that goes. Hegseth is the other one of the other big stories I wanted to talk to you about. He is vowing to fight. Trump considers DeSantis for defense secretary. I don't think I believe the DeSantis part of this. Could be wrong on that. I don't think I believe it, though. I think it's more of a thing of like, hey, trying to get people excited to maybe dump Hegseth from an anti-Hegseth crowd. But Mr. Trump has told people close to him that he likes the idea of giving Mr. DeSantis the job, saying it would be a big story if he resurrected Mr. DeSantis after defeating him. That's the sort of exact sort of sentence right there that does not makes me not believe this. If they actually wanted DeSantis to take this job, they would not be leaking things like, oh, he wants to resurrect him. Because DeSantis doesn't need resurrection. I mean, he didn't win a primary, but he's got a great record as a governor, has a very bright future. And the decision for him right now is to say, well, where's the upside in my personal move? Like, obviously, he can sit there and do a great job for the state of Florida. I know the people of Florida would love if he did that. There's not much upside left about being a governor for a couple more years there. Successfully, for him at least. It's success. You know, I know he cares about the state, so it would be good for that. But like, generally speaking, he can't do any more good there. He can't improve his personal brand anymore by being a good governor for a couple more years. He could take a position in the administration, and I think he'd do a really good job if he did. But like, if you're trying to lure him into taking that job, you don't leak sentences like that. Saying it would be a big story if he resurrected Mr. DeSantis, that would shock me. The president-elect also has praised Mr. DeSantis' ability to run the state of Florida, where Mr. Trump lives, and has mentioned that he is a Navy guy. Speaking with Megyn Kelly of Sirius XM Radio, Mr. Hegseth dismissed allegations of rape, sexual assault, financial mismanagement, and drunken behavior as nothing but a fiction created by Mr. Trump's enemies. He compared the accusations against him to the accusations against Justice Kavanaugh during the Supreme Court confirmation hearings. I did listen to that interview with Megyn Kelly. I think he's pretty convincing, honestly, that he had a part of his life where he, you know, was probably drinking and partying too much, certainly sleeping around more than he should have. And that was a big struggle that he had at one point. Says he's past that. He's got a lot of people who vouch for him, a lot of people that I know who vouch for him. You know, and I know people from the period where he had some of these issues. And that was kind of like the reputation. He was kind of known as a ladies' man, kind of maybe doing a little bit too much of that. Stuff. However, never was he known as someone who was abusing people. Never was he known as someone, you know, of course, he was not known as a rapist, to say the very obvious. But he was known as a guy who everybody really liked. And, you know, was known as a person who always did a good job at work. You know, you have somebody who you're doing a morning show with. It's really hard to see them as a person who's out carousing with you know, tons and tons of drinks every single night when you're there with him at 5 o'clock in the morning every morning. And many people, Will Cain has been a very prominent supporter of his, saying, like, I was next to this guy every day. Like, I never saw any signs of this whatsoever. Now, that doesn't mean none of this stuff happened. We don't know for sure, but there's a lot of unnamed sources bringing this to you. A lot of people who won't put their name by their claims. And, you know, to me, I'm highly skeptical of some of the worst accusations against Hegseth. It is the classic art of the smear, Mr. Hegseth said. Take whatever tiny kernels of truth, and there are tiny, tiny ones there, blow them up into a masquerade of a narrative about somebody I am definitely not. He later told Megyn Kelly that if he was confirmed, he would not have a drop of alcohol during the time he serves as defense secretary. So you've got that. By the way, the big piece of evidence that I think is making people in the Trump camp waver a little bit was this note, letter from his mom, an email that kind of went after him, although she's backing off of that and actually did a long time ago. Pete Hegseth's mother defends her son as a changed man and says her scathing email was sent in haste. An interview to Fox and Friends, Penelope Hegseth addressed an email that she wrote to her son in 2018, whose details were published by the New York Times last week, accused him of mistreating women for years. I wrote that in haste. I wrote that with deep emotions. I wrote that as a parent, she told the network. It was during a time when Pete Hegseth was going through a very difficult divorce. I wrote that out of love. About 2 hours later, I retracted it with an apology, but nobody's seen that. That is an important detail. You can't take everything inside of a family relationship. You can't just believe. The fact that the mom wrote one negative message years and years and years ago is not a reason, especially with her saying she now vouches for him. I will also note, you know, one of the big things there is that she used the term abuse. You've been abusing women. At no point in the, and that's been pulled out as a quote by the media, at no point in that email does it identify as the type of abuse you'd think of when you say, okay, you've been abusing women. You know, to me that says, God, you know, hitting them, assaulting them, God forbid. What he basically saying, like, your abuse was you were cheating on them all the time. That's bad. There's no question about that. But, you know, it's been taken out of context by the media. I just want to point that out. And finally, I give a couple of messages, you know, a couple of stories there that not so positive. Someone being killed, an assassination of character potentially with Pete Hegseth. Let me give you a positive story, though. This is a huge one, and I don't know that I ever thought I'd see the day that I read this headline. Bitcoin storms above 100,000 as Trump 2.0 fuels crypto euphoria. Now, I saw the Trump angle there, and then I saw Donald Trump's truth. I'll give you my honest reaction to this. Trump writes, congratulations, Bitcoiners, $100,000. You're welcome. Together, we will make America great again. And I thought to myself, all right, Trump, like this is a major project with people, you know, millions of people who have put unending amounts of time into developing this project. And for you to come in and try to take credit for it, especially when you were opposed to it in your last administration, is a little rich. And then I stopped and I thought to myself, yeah, but the last $20,000 or so is pretty much Trump. Like Trump signaling positivity toward this industry really has juiced Bitcoin. I think he deserves credit for at least the last 20,000, and who knows what beyond this. Part of it is his SEC chair pick, which is a very pro crypto guy. We can go into maybe more detail about that on a full show later on. But I always come back to this analysis, though, and this is what sold me on Bitcoin many, many years ago. There can only be 21 million of them. And we know about a quarter of them are lost forever. It might be a little bit of a high number. Maybe it's 10 or 15%, but a lot of them we know are lost forever, just in wallets that people mined when they were worth, you know, 5 cents. And, you know, they threw out the computer and they're just gone forever. Now it's worth 100,000. We know there's tons of them are lost. So maybe there's, let's say, 17, 16 million Bitcoin that are actually possible to circulate. They can't print any more than 21 million. And I just keep coming back to the idea that unless you think this government, this world is going to change gears and all of a sudden start spending within its means, how is Bitcoin not a positive long-term bet? You know, it's the scarcity is the key, and they can't print any more of these Bitcoin. If you want to get a sense as to how scarce I'm talking about, if you might think like, oh, well, Bitcoin is $100,000. That's just for millionaires. Okay, fine. There are 21 million maximum Bitcoins that can ever be mined. There are 22 million millionaires just in America. That doesn't include anybody in China or India or Russia or anywhere else. Dubai, none of it. Europe, nothing. Just in America, there are more millionaires than there are Bitcoin that will ever come out. They all can't own one. The scarcity is the key. And, you know, the great thing about Bitcoin as well is that the more people who involve themselves in this, the more secure it gets. We're now at a point like where I think it's quite clear that you should own some Bitcoin. At least I would argue that you should, even if you're just dollar cost averaging a little bit in every once in a while. Because, you know, there was a point where I was like, you know, look, this could go to zero at any time. And I still think that's possible. There are theoretical challenges that could happen with Bitcoin. Obviously, governments getting involved is always a question. But at the end of the day, there's not a lot of $2 trillion industries that just went to zero. In fact, I can't think of any in history that went to zero from $2 trillion. It might go down. It could drop 50%. It could drop 80%. It's happened over and over and over again. But I think it's here to stay. And let me take you back here as we got to 100,000. Just a few years to 2010. A guy went online in the early Bitcoin forums and said, I want to buy something with my Bitcoin. I'll send anyone 10,000 Bitcoin for a pizza or two. He gets the pizza. He comes back, takes a picture with his kids with the two pizzas. Here they are. It's celebrated on May 22nd. It was 2010. He says, I just want to report that I successfully traded 10,000 bitcoins for pizza. He gives the pictures there with him and his kids. And I just want to say, before we go any deeper on this, can we zoom in on that right pizza there, the one with the toppings? These are Papa John's pizzas. Look at the section of that pizza that has no toppings. It's got to be like 20% of the pizza. I mean, the topping distribution on that pizza is a disgrace, Papa John's. And I will say, if nothing else, this guy who did something really, really important, this is actually a heroic action. And I'm sure there are days he's very miserable because those two pizzas today will be worth $1 billion for two Papa John's pizzas. So I'm sure there are days where he really, the pizza probably wasn't that good to justify that price. But to start this whole thing, to get a transaction going, to make it so it wasn't just a computer program, but it actually meant something in the real world, was a massive step. And this guy's a hero for doing it. I don't think that makes up for the $1 billion, but you know, I hope he knows that. At the end of the day, Papa John's, maybe step up here. Say, hey, I know you got those two pizzas for $1 billion, and 20% of one of the pizzas had no toppings. Just for that, this guy deserves free pizza for life. So I stand here in front of you today to beg Papa John's, step up and give Laszlo free pizza for life. It's the least society can do as we look at Bitcoin 100,000. The holidays are an amazing time to find out that you actually don't know what people in your life want at all. You know, I mean, something that practically you want to get them. I mean, they probably already have it. One go-to that I have all the time, every year, for somebody is something that they can use every single day. They could use multiples of. It's Raycon's Everyday Earbuds. I have purchased a Raycon Everyday Earbuds. I've got them in my closet right now. It is a gift for a lucky person in my life that I shall not name at this time. But they are a must-have for any audio lover and make an amazing holiday gift for anyone on your nice list. People always like them. That's the... You want to get them something that they're going to like. And like if you have those like, you know, the Apple ones, they kind of dangle below your ear and they're not flat and it's plush against your ear. The Raycons do this and they do it really, really well. They already have tens of thousands of five-star reviews. Their latest model is better than ever. It comes with 32-hour battery life, multi-point connectivity, which is really cool. If you happen to be someone who's like, you know, you're listening to something on your phone, but you're using your laptop and you want to fire something up on your laptop, you can be connected to both of them at the same time. Also comes with active noise cancellations. They're available in a variety of vibrant colors. They're going to be a hit for whoever unwraps them. So Raycons, give them a shot. They start at just half the price of premium other premium audio brands, and they have like a 30-day happiness guarantee, easy returns. They make it really simple. Save big for the holidays. Get up to 25% off site-wide right now at buyraycon.com/do. 25% off everything on Raycon's website, up to 25% right now when you buy raycon.com/do, buyraycon.com/do. It's buyraycon.com/do. Well, as I mentioned, Bitcoin hit 100,000 yesterday, and years ago I had an experience with that particular number. I tweeted about it last night. The tweet reads, one of Glenn Beck's producers once told me years ago that if Bitcoin hit 100,000, we would never see him again. It will be interesting to see if he shows up tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, he showed up today. Jason Buttrell is here, head writer, researcher for Glenn Beck. It was you. This is years ago, and you made an investment in Bitcoin. You said if they ever gets to 100,000, you're going to disappear. We're never going to see or hear from you again. But yet here you are. So explain yourself.
Well, this is a crazy story because I had never even really thought about Bitcoin before. And then Glenn and I think you at the same time were talking about it a lot on radio. Glenn wanted to do TV shows on it back then. Yeah. So I was having to research and write, and I was like having to write these shows I knew nothing about. And I actually,
I've been there.
Yeah, so I think it was while we were doing a TV show, I was like, what the heck? So I went up to talk to you about it. And I don't know if you remember this meeting or not, but I walked up to your office and then sat down and I was like, how the heck do I even buy this stuff? And you told me about one of the ways to buy. And so I used that medium to do it. I don't want to say it out loud in case
you can still use it.
It was about Coinbase.
Coinbase.
So you were telling me about that, and then I was like, well, screw it. I'll just look into it. And then it just kept going up and kept going up. And so I was like, I'm going to put a significant amount into this. And then I went crypto crazy, and I started investing into the trash coins and like Doge and stuff, which I actually made a pretty good profit off of.
Very well on the Doge, I remember.
I did. But I would actually, what's crazy is I got into it because of the... More like the ideology behind it.
Yes,
and
me too.
Not to sound like a hardcore libertarian here, but the idea of breaking the Fed was very, very attractive to me.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm not exactly the same. I like that it undermines government. I do like that, and I think that's important. The reason why I kind of became convinced it was a good investment was because of what we talked about all the time when it comes to spending, right? Like, unless you think the government's going to turn this around and all of a sudden start spending within their means, it's hard to see Bitcoin as anything other than a really good investment. I mean, it's possible, maybe the Doge committee with Elon and Vivek come in and turn this whole thing around. But unless you think that's happening, I don't see why it still doesn't keep going up.
Well, yeah, I think so too. And I think, and this was advice that you gave me back then that I still think about today, is that, I mean, something crazy could happen, a major terror attack. It all comes out that it was financed all through, you know, one of these crypto coins and everything, the regulation hammer comes down, everything comes crashing down and you lose everything. That's still possible.
Yeah, and you have to think of it that way.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and I still don't know what's happening with, you know, regulation. It looks like it's a lot more...
Next 4 years should be pretty good.
Friendly, yeah. I mean, it seems like it. But you just never know.
I always think of it that way. Like, I have in Bitcoin, which is not that much, but whatever I have in Bitcoin could go away at any moment. However, the secondary part of me has emerged over the past few years, which is just kind of to say that, like, I just can't think of any examples of a true $2 trillion industry that disappear.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not saying it's impossible, but, like, is there any example of this? Like, you know, we're talking now, $2 trillion is just Bitcoin. It doesn't even include Ethereum and all the other ones. Like, this is a multi-trillion dollar business. A lot of people, a lot of governments have invested in it. It's just hard now at this point to see it going to zero outside of some major technological attack. Some hackers come up with some way of breaking Bitcoin, which, you know, I don't think is really possible, but maybe theoretically possible with some high-level supercomputer in the future.
I agree. There's no precedent for something like that happening. But I will say that there is always the possibility.
Yes.
One guy created this, supposedly.
Yes.
One guy created this. And supposedly, he still would be the largest holder of Bitcoin coins in the world.
Over a million.
If he still has the keys to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it kind of sounds like this person's probably an ideologue, so I doubt he would do this, or they, or whatever. But if they did suddenly decide to dump it, I think that would probably crash and tank the entire group.
I think it would crash for a while, but I don't think it goes to zero. I mean, I don't know. Who knows at this point? I guess we're in deep speculation land. But I'm with you in that. I don't think. My guess, more than anything else, is that person is not alive.
Yeah.
We were talking about a documentary that came out, and we talked to Colin Hoback, the director of it, on the show a few weeks ago. And like, he made a pretty good case that maybe it's one of these guys. But still, even if it is, I think it might be an ideologue. Or someone who's just lost access to these wallets. We'll never know, I suppose, for sure.
Well, the reason I am here today is because that was my limit that I said, okay, if it hits 100K, I'm probably good. But this was back in 2014.
Yeah.
I have no one that does my finances. Like, I'm the guy.
You're the guy.
I'm the guy with, you know,
scary.
It's very, very scary because I'm not good at this stuff at all. But I mean, I wasn't factoring in everything else would happen. And then Joe Biden became president. Inflation went out the roof.
Yeah, you have to raise your limits. Your FU money has to be higher.
Okay, and I would say what that number is, which I'm not going to do because I don't want another one of these moments to happen again. So I'm just not going to show up one day, Stu.
Yes, and we will not see you. I'll know.
I'll text
that was
you
your
as I'm flying to Mexico.
There you go. It's funny, too. I mean, it is such a... we always think about, like, oh, gosh, like, I don't want this to happen again. This is an incredible thing, right? Like, for all the people, and one of my favorite things to see when I go and I'm on social media every once in a while and I'm reading through messages, I was posting some stuff on Bitcoin, were the people that say, you know, I actually were listening to you and Glenn talk about this in 2014 and bought some, and I was able to buy a house, or I was able to buy a car, or pay for my kids' college. Like, It's like my favorite thing to say. All right, let me switch gears from something very positive to something on the other side. Although I guess the left thinks it's very positive. The CEO of United Healthcare being assassinated in the streets of New York. I mean, you kind of came to the blaze through Glenn, and you actually worked, obviously you were in the military, but you worked for Glenn's security. You were doing security on high level individuals like a CEO of a company. The reaction was like this had to be like a professional hit. Like, I mean, this cold blooded guy walks up behind him in the middle of New York, puts a bunch of bullets in him, then just rides away on a bike. When you looked at the video, what did you think?
The exact opposite. There was tons of people. Tons of people. It was going wild yesterday. Professional hit. And I mean, and I agree that sounds sexy. But yeah, I've analyzed tons and tons of these in both my previous jobs. And this guy, I mean, my personal belief, he's probably somebody that's very, very emotional on whatever happened to him. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying, well, he didn't appear to be emotional. Well, I'm not saying he was acting out, hysterically at the time. Mm-hmm. But clearly, if he chose to kill someone in this manner, that he was very, very emotional about it. He clearly did prep work on this, mm-hmm. knew exactly where the CEO was going to be. I think it was like a shareholders meeting or something like that. Mm-hmm. Knew that he probably surveilled him, I would guess. But the guy was clearly an amateur. He wasn't wearing gloves, didn't appear to be wearing gloves in the thing. A professional hitter would know that there was cameras all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you're in New York, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So even if there's not a direct camera right there, which there was a direct camera right there, no matter where you go, and I think he took off on an e-bike.
Right, a city bike too. And is something they could track.
Something you can track, credit card, app, everything. You have to, there's cameras everywhere. But beyond that, I mean, the gun that he was using, and I saw that it was crazy. The New York cops were saying, I bet my pension, I think was a direct quote, that it was like this like World War II era pistol. That seems to be fake news. So it's clearly not. You can see the slide going back. It looks like a low caliber, like a 9mm pistol with a very long silencer. And I don't know did you watch the video?
Yeah, I did.
So he shoots, and then you see him racking back the slide.
Yeah.
He's trying to get it to work. Well, the reason is because if you don't know about guns with silencers on them, you have to have a special device called a Nielsen device in there that compensates for the extra weight because the rounds won't cycle through the gun.
Okay.
So that's what he's doing. So he either has never fired a pistol with a silencer on it before and it surprised him, or he couldn't figure out why it wasn't working right. He's like, screw it, I'll just like fire a racket. Either way, a professional is not doing that.
Right, right. Yeah, that's very true, because you do notice that in the video. He's having all sorts of trouble with the gun.
Yeah.
There was some speculation that maybe he was trying to catch the shells. I mean, he seemed to have either engraved or wrote on these things, on the shelves, a message which was like, depose, deny. It seems like just anti-insurance propaganda.
Yeah.
Do you have any speculation as to who this person could be? Do you think it's a specific victim of or perceived victim of the healthcare system?
My first thought when it happened was it's probably just disgruntled employee. But but my second option was someone that had their claim denied.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm leaning now. Someone that had their claim denied.
Because you've been profiling people like this forever. I mean, you have
for a long time.
I mean, especially working for Glenn, lots of psychopaths. Many of them work for Glenn. So let me go to Pete Hegseth. Now, interestingly, when we were in New York, when GBTV launched, Pete Hegseth was actually on what was GBTV at the time, turned into The Blaze on a show called Real News. He did some stuff there, went on to, of course, Fox News and veterans groups. He is now being attacked pretty aggressively. We were just talking about this a little bit before on the betting markets. Pete Hegseth's confirmation now is something like 16%, which is really low. They seem incredibly committed to this. He's out there, full-fledged media thing. He did a big thing with Megyn Kelly yesterday. His mom went on Fox News. They are trying to save this nomination. What's your take? Do you think they can?
I'm surprised. I think they can. I'm surprised that the betting markets are putting it that low, because I just saw Mike Lee tweet not too long ago, maybe an hour or so ago, that they had all the votes. They had every single Republican on board to confirm him. So unless there's something we do not know about and they don't know about, that the bettors do, which maybe they do,
yeah,
like some more damaging information. The character assassination is not going to stop with him.
No. Because he's now, this is something you see in these situations a lot. When they take out a target, they go after the next scalp. Like, yeah. It's not like they stop. So like, giving up on someone like Hegseth is just going to make everybody turn their fire to the next person, whether it's Pam Bondi or it's, you know, somebody else. They got Gates out of there. Now they are on to Hegseth.
Yeah, and we know why the left does this, because yeah. I'm sure the right does this to an extent when it's their turn to confirm, you know, some of the other people.
Sure.
It's, you know, it's a scalp, like how you said. It's just a scalp, just kind of like a screw you to the administration. I think it goes deeper with Pete, because I think Pete, I think he's being put there for a very specific job. They turned our military into an ideological entity, which it was never supposed to be. Mm-hmm. That. It's supposed to be strictly for defense. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. And I think Pete was put in place there because he's very on the record in public about the DEI stuff, all this other crap, this woke agenda that's been kind of thrust into our military. That needs to be cut out. That needs to be the top priority day one. When they take office. And I think that's his job. Now, it's another conversation entirely whether he is fully capable of doing the job after that initial step has been done. I'm not sure. I'm willing to give the president the benefit of the doubt on this. I will say usually the reason why that job goes to like a very high rank, like a, you know, like a 4-star general, mm-hmm. or like a big time CEO, mm-hmm. they can do it because they're good administrators. They know how to, you know, manage thousands and thousands of people. And then in the general's case, not only can they manage thousands of people, but they also know the ins and outs of moving battalions here, divisions there, all that stuff. It's going to be hard for someone like Pete to do that because he just doesn't have the know-how. Do I think he can get people around him and get spun up on it? Yes, I do.
Seems like a smart guy.
I am more interested in what he does day one to reestablish our base with our military, which is defense number one, ideological bullcrap out.
Mm. And that does seem like he's pretty qualified to do that,
right.
and has the full clearance from the president to go after that. Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Still, he's still here. He still works here. Glenn was delighted to hear that you actually showed up to work today. Thanks so much, and I appreciate it. Follow him on social media. You had a really good breakdown, by the way, of the shooting, like in real time, of why this person did not look like a professional, even though a lot of people were posting the opposite. So I would encourage you to follow Jason's account because you get that stuff kind of in real time. Jason, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
A hit piece from NBC News. Incoming Trump administration plans to deport some migrants to countries other than their own. Those bastards. Now, of course, it is. I will say deporting people is sometimes easier than you know, or harder than it seems, because a lot of times these people don't, like Venezuela might not want the crazy murderer back in their country. And so if they say no, what do? You drop them out of an airplane over Caracas? I mean, if they don't want you to land there and they're not going to take them, you don't necessarily always have an easy path. Sometimes other countries, third parties, will take the migrants, and that's what's going on here. And this is presented as some bad thing, but like, number one, if they can't stay here, they were running from their old country. Probably best that they're not going back for them to their old country, number one. And number two, we're told all the time how much we hate people who look different than us and how terrible it is to come here because of all the hate mongers. Maybe they'd like a third country better. I don't know. By the way, listen to the countries we're talking about. Turks and Caicos? Can I be deported to Turks and Caicos? The Bahamas? Panama and Grenada, but there's some decent beaches in some of these places. I think I'd sign up for at least a vacation to go to some of them. Now, what's fascinating about this is you have the situation where Trump, and I've said this before, about 25% of the border problem can be changed just with tone. If you just say and act serious about enforcing the border, a lot of people just won't come. A lot of people here will just self-deport. And sometimes with just words, you can threaten things like massive tariffs against Mexico, and things just magically start happening. Mexican authorities seizing 20 million doses of fentanyl in a record haul. Listen to this breakdown by, this is a Mexico-based security consultant, Trump's threats, without a doubt, have set the wheels spinning. All of this is being done to arrive at the negotiating table with Trump's security team with a portfolio of achievements. Mexico can achieve two goals, he added. It can help the United States in terms of migration and fentanyl. And at the same time, with those same operations, it could begin to pacify some parts of the country. So, yeah, you know, having some laws that are enforced in your country, always a good idea. But this is like where Trump is a president and Biden is just absent, right? Like, these are, you know, same thing with the hostages we talked about in Israel. You can come out and just change your tone and say, damn you, give me back these hostages, control this border, and things just magically start happening because, of course, Mexico can do more to control this. They just don't care. And Joe Biden's done nothing to make them do it. So that's where we've landed. Finally, we have Biden. If he is going to be president, this is what he's going to spend his time doing. He is discussing preemptive pardons for those in Trump's crosshairs. People like Adam Schiff, the new senator from California. Liz Cheney of Wyoming, Anthony Fauci is another one. And at issue, they say, to repurpose a phrase, is whether to take Trump seriously and literally when it comes to his prospective revenge tour against Democrats and others in the so-called deep state who've raised his ire. Maybe before the end of the year, we should do a monologue on this, because I hear it all the time in news broadcasts that Trump is threatening to imprison his political opponents. Now, he has threatened to imprison some people who are also political opponents, but what he's saying is they've committed crimes, right? He's saying, I'm going to go after them and investigate them for crimes. And obviously judges have something to do with whether they actually go to jail or not. Now, you could say he's abusing this. He's accusing too many people of crimes, but he's not just saying, like, at least to my knowledge, I don't remember him saying, hey, like, I'm just going after all of my opponents. I'm going to throw them in prison. Like, but yet that is repeated constantly as if it's an absolute obvious fact by the news media. We'll do something on that here in the coming weeks, which, by the way, there's not that many of. We're only here for a couple more weeks before we go on Christmas break. Hopefully you're getting ready for the holidays and not being sent to prison by Donald Trump. Let's say it's like 2014, you're listening to your favorite talk show, you're, you know, Glenn Beck, some other guy on the air together blabbing about, I don't know, Bitcoin. And you decide, I'm going to throw a few $100 behind that. And now you're incredibly independently wealthy and you're ready to buy a brand new gigantic home with your Bitcoin profits. Well, if you want to do that, you want to make sure you get a good real estate agent to help you with that transaction. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find that person. You don't want some ordinary agent that's going to just like, oh, show up, you know, and occasionally post an ad, maybe a couple balloons for an open house. All right, whatever. But like, you need somebody who really knows what they're doing, someone who's mastered the market. And RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is like, you know, a list of these people, right? Like, you go there. You get in touch with them. They'll hook you up with the best agent in your area, whether you're buying a home, whether you're selling a home. And I would have an agent on your side, on both sides of that transaction. I'm a big believer in that. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. The name says it all. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. This is free for you. So take advantage of it. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Before I go, I want to tell you that AOC is expected to run for the top oversight committee role. This is a big gig in Washington, highly influential. And to throw this out there, I don't know for sure that it's happening, but it really does feel like AOC is going to try to become the Bernie Sanders liberal presidential candidate replacement in 2028 for the Democrats. Like, she's going to be, you know, obviously a lot younger and just as liberal and crazy. And they're going to need somebody in that role to run that left flank. And she's got a chance to win, honestly, with the insanity, the way this party is right now. Also, let me tell you about StudosAmerica.com. You can go there, get $30 off the subscription to Blaze TV. If you go there, if you support this show, if you support what Blaze TV stands for, if you want to see the new documentary, America's Next Aviation Disaster, starring me and so many other great ones, go to StudosAmerica.com. StudosAmerica.com. Get $30 off your subscription.